Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Brass Tack Sunday for October 21st. I'm Sanka Price, your moderator for today's program, in which we will examine three topics in particular. The first is the political fallout, if any, for the five-month-old Mia Motley government as a result of the debt restructuring exercise and now the layoffs in the public sector. Secondly, we want to discuss the effectiveness of the official opposition. Has the Joe Adley-led opposition been a rubber stamp for the ruling Barbados Labour Party, or has it been a robust critic of the government? And in our third segment, we want to deliberate on the Democratic Labour Party and their rebuilding process. And we'll ask, what does the DLP need to do to recapture the confidence of the electorate? I know you know today the Democratic Labour Party, they're holding a retreat at George Street, their headquarters, on the whole rebuilding process. To give us their perspective on these issues, we have in the studio veteran political scientist Dr. George Bell. We also have Minister in the Ministry of Finance, Mr. Ryan Strawn. On his way is trade unionist and the key spokesman for the official opposition, Senator Caswell Franklin. And I'm still awaiting word from the Democratic Labour Party on their representative. I spoke to its president, Ms. Verla De Pisa, and she was supposed to get back to me. So hopefully we will get someone from the Democratic Labour Party. With a panel like this, we can expect some robust discussion. But before we get started, I need to remind you that this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing material.
So building supplies, big or small, and Brilliant Metals, we have it all. And Brilliant Metals, we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday. I'm Sanka Price. Our producer is Dennis Johnson. His will be the first voice you will hear when you call us today at 4341790 to participate in today's program. You can also have your say via WhatsApp at 266-4862. And Dr. Bell, let's start looking first and foremost, as I was said earlier, the Democratic Labour Party is holding a retreat today. And at that retreat, they're supposed to start looking at the whole rebuilding process. So what do you think the Democratic Labour Party needs to do to recapture the confidence of the electorate?
Okay. I'm going to delineate a number of things that I think would be relevant to the Democratic Labour Party in relation to responding to the defeat and rebuilding. The first thing is to recognize the devastating defeat, the extent of that defeat, and the implications, the political implications of such a devastating defeat. I think you also have then to recognize that you cannot command recovery. So you can't ask for recovery because of desire, because of anger, or because of revenge. There is it is something in which you have to show some humility and respond accordingly. I would want to raise the issue of the way in which leaders have responded. That is, skilled political leaders have responded to political defeat. And we have good examples in Mr. Barra, the right excellent Errol Barra, and in Mr. Michael Manley of Jamaica, the two of those. If we look at them, we could see how they responded to devastating defeats in the case of Mr. Barra in 1976 and Mr. Manley in 1980. The finances of a party are very problematic when they're in opposition. And I've noticed that the president of the DLP is saying that she's already addressing this But their problems are going to be compounded by what had been introduced in Barbados to assist political parties, that is the loss of the subvention. I think it's $150,000. So
yeah.
That they will now have lost because they have no representation in Parliament. They will also have to look at their organization, including the leadership structure, to see whether the organization is befitting a political party that will be most effective in the third decade of the 21st century, as which we are approaching. And this includes, well, the leadership structure, because that is going to, that has many dimensions, so we can go into that, but the leadership structure and the organization, so organization including leadership structure, would be things that they would have to look at, because they have to take this opportunity, and this is not exclusive to the Democratic Labour Party. This is really relevant to all political structures, I would say, globally right now, in response to the way the world has changed, information has changed in terms of communication and so on, the level of awareness of the general population and electorates and their capacity to do things that they couldn't do before and so on. It must have implications for organization. And therefore, if you're in opposition in the way that the DLP is now in opposition, that is their opportunity to deal with that. I think the Barbados Labour Party dealt with some of it while they were in opposition. And they will have to continue to deal with it as a new government. They have to engage in discussions on the vision for Barbados. I think this was particularly problematic for the Democratic Labour Party, that their vision seemed to be distorted or misplaced, and it definitely needed rethinking and repositioning. They particularly have to critique any xenophobic tendencies that they had, any autarkic characteristics that they perceived to be necessary in the economy, in the economic model that they were apparently tied to. Those two would be things that they should look at to see whether they need to escape them. Any propensity to xenophobia, any propensity to or overemphasis on autarky. The development model, they have to relate it to the vision, but the development model, this is their chance to deal with reviewing development models. And this will be very wide-ranging, so there are various dimensions of that. But that will feed into a discourse on their ideology. And in the ideology, you're talking about really bringing more complicated issues and more complicated ways of dealing with issues and solutions, making them simple and general to the public, that so the public can internalize them and build practically around them in responding to whatever needs are there for development in the society. That takes skill to bring the thing down to a level where ordinary people can be comfortable with it and can have a clearer understanding and therefore can put energy in their response and support for you. So you have to make your development model ideological in that sense. And there are various ways in which one could define ideology, but I'm using it in that way. And then most importantly, you have to implement the reforms having thought about all the things you're going to do. You have to implement, and the question is how? How would you implement? Are you going to implement only from above, or are you going to implement from below? Or is it better to implement both from above and from below? In relation to implementation from below, I think they have to look at their constituency branches, because the constituency branches are going to produce things that they might never have seen in relation to the leadership that is already in place. And you might need fresh leadership. You might need young leadership. You might need leadership with a different vision. So that the role of the constituency branch is the leader, whoever is the leader, whether there's a transitional leader or not, they must be able to engage the constituency branches to the extent of seeing if there's anything good, new, different that can carry forward the party. And then they have to struggle, in my view, against some characteristics that were also present in the party during its time in office over the last 10 years. They have to deal with the question of whether they want to be inclusive or whether they want to be sectarian. They have to work on whether they want to have party paramountcy or whether they want to have a party that can be a basis for broad alliances, which is usually the basis on which a party in a liberal democratic system will be successful, that it really is an organization of broad alliances. Those are some of the general summary positions that I would raise for the Democratic Labour Party to look at. Each of them can be elaborated on, so we can see that it's an extremely long, complicated, complex issue that one will be dealing with. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Bell. While Dr. Bell was speaking, we were joined by the president of the Democratic Labour Party, Ms. Verla De Pisa. Thank you very much for coming. I know that it really is asking a lot for you to be here, given the fact that the retreat is on, but it shows how you recognize the importance of coming to speak to the public at this time. We were also joined by Senator Caswell Franklin, and he is from the official opposition led by Bishop Joe Atherley. And so far we've heard some of the ideas from Dr. Bell as to how the Democratic Labour Party could possibly regain the confidence of the public. Mr. De Pisa, would you like to give us some idea of what some of the strategies that you're looking at now in the party?
Good morning to you and good morning to all of the other participants, including our listeners. As we speak, the Democratic Labour Party is engaging in an exercise that will crystallize an answer to that question. We just concluded the first formal session, and our breakout sessions, by the end of the day, we will have our structure in theory until such time as the organs of the party endorse. So the question is premature by about 48 hours, but very shortly we will be in a position to give specifics on that point.
Mm-hmm. But what sort of reaction are you getting now from the party, given what is happening within the country? It's only 5 months since the election has finished, but what sort of reaction are you getting to the party? Because I know you've been active on the ground.
Yes. The electorate itself, whether it is party members or not, are having what I choose to call a come to Jesus moment at this point. The difference between rhetoric and reality is coming home and sitting in people's living rooms. That augurs well for any alternative thought. We can't in any way negate how impactful policies on a society will be, especially when it is time for voter initiative, which unfortunately we take only at intervals. But what the exercise that is happening now is happening to people. It is not happening to an economy. It is happening to people. And I think realities speak louder than any speech that you can make at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. And you think that that has sort of encouraged people to regret that they have voted for the Barbados Labour Party, or regret that they've voted the government out of office?
There's regret. The level of regret will differ from person to person as you speak, mm-hmm. but there is most definitely regret right now. I think what was sold is not necessarily what has been received. I think that is an across-the-board feeling now, and we will probably see more of it because we're speaking about eventualities in the moment, in the month of October, to meet initial IMF requirements, but always with a mind and an eye to the fact that there are 7 other assessments and 7 other benchmarks that will have to be met in order to receive other drawdowns. Okay. This is just a start.
Right. Senator Franklin, welcome again.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you.
Okay. We heard, and we have three different segments, and we heard, and I'm started with the Democratic Labor Party because I know that whoever was going to come as a representative can only be here for a short while. Yes. And you're giving us an hour?
One hour.
That's where we're starting with the Democratic Labor Party first, and then we're going in to look at other aspects that I would have elaborated on earlier. So, in your view, what do you think the Democratic Labor Party can do to regain confidence?
Well, I don't know if it's a matter of regaining confidence. The government is not throwing away the confidence that was bestowed upon them. Mm-hmm. So what will happen, there will be people looking to say, well, look, these people started betraying us already. So they might start looking for the Democratic Labor Party or another alternative. This government has sold the people a bill of goods, and they're not delivering. And what they said they were going to deliver is not what the people are getting. And people are very angry. I received telephone calls from as early as yesterday morning at 6:30, right through the day. You know, the only time I didn't get a telephone call is when I had to go and turn the phone off because there was some place, but the phone was ringing nonstop. House and cell phone. And all the complaints against what the government is doing, the people know. Mm-hmm. You imagine people were told by the Prime Minister, no less. You are going to send on people who have less than 6 years service. I don't believe that you send on anybody at all, but unless you start at the top. But people with 12 years going home, people call me crying. I don't know what to tell them. And this is not what people were offered. I'm sure if the people knew this was happening, the Baptist Labour Party would still be in opposition.
Well, maybe we can look at it from, we let Ryan Strong get involved here. You any response to Mr. Franklin?
Well, I would like to respond to Barbados.
Yeah.
I think it is interesting that we're having a discussion about, in terms of this segment, about the Democratic Labour Party and what's happening right now, which is what I think Mr. Franklin is referring to. And the reality of the situation is that the people of Barbados made a decision on May 24th that this country needed to go in a completely different direction. And the fact that we are engaging in an exercise now where we have to consolidate fiscally and create a platform that allows the economy to grow, what we have sought to do is to provide that framework that will actually stabilize this economy. Now, we have taken a very strategic decision about how we are going to modernize government and who are the persons that we believe be able to help us to modernize government over the next couple of years. And so to the extent that there is displacement that is very unfortunate, we have gone through this exercise in a very laser-like fashion. But I want to put on the table, though, that this is just one small component of the aggregate adjustment that government now has to make. And I think that to only focus on the fact that some persons will be losing their jobs by the end of October. And there's an indication, yes, we have to meet some targets. But the targets that we have to meet in the short term will be critical for the signals that investors, whether domestically or foreign, will get an appreciation that the government is actually doing the things that it said that it will do, that we are doing to correct a very serious problem that was created by the former administration. And so it's not an exercise in saying we started out wanting to send home people. We looked at the aggregate picture. And the aggregate picture is we are creating a situation now where we have to make approximately $750 million in an adjustment on government's expenditure. And the reality is how we've chosen to execute that is to spread the burden as fairly as possible across the board, such that there's as minimal displacement as possible, but there will be displacement. But over the course of the coming months, and I just want to make it absolutely clear, the difference between this government and the previous administration is that whilst persons are being displaced at the moment, we are also putting in place a specific program and strategies to get these persons to participate in the modernization of government. We are using the procurement of goods and services of government. We've reserved
in agreement at the Social Partnership, 20% of government's procurement over the next 4 years to be accessible specifically to these persons, which we are in the process of operationalizing, because we know that that is important to minimize the very displacement that we are talking about. And then the third thing is the training element involved in that process over the next 4 years is going to be equally important, because we want persons to upskill to be able to earn much greater levels of income in the future. And so I fundamentally believe that is the substantive difference between what happened in 2013 and what is happening now.
All right. I'm going to pick you up from there later. Yeah. But sure. I just want to go back to Senator Franklin. I suspect what you're talking about is the way it is being done.
I am talking about the way it is being done, uh-huh. and they need to
and
do
fact.
It. Okay. Look, the government came in and they rushed in. They gave people the idea, oh, we are going to hit the ground running. Well, they hit the ground on the face. That's the problem. They didn't know, they didn't analyze anything. They listened to the leaks and propaganda that they were getting from their disgruntled supporters within the Barber's Labor Party who were working in government service. And they started to operationalize.
So what facts do you have to support what you're saying?
What facts I have to support saying?
Yeah.
I'll give you Transport Board, for example. We had the problem with the Transport Board. They came in and started firing people at Transport Board without looking to see what was happening. The Transport Board was being turned around. There was a lot of sabotage from people who didn't want the Transport Board to work because they wanted to embarrass the last.
Support what you're saying.
What facts I have to support saying?
Yeah.
I'll give you Transport Board, for example. And if
what evidence? Because even on national radio, we're having a conversation.
Okay, I'll give you some evidence.
We on national radio.
We had a situation where we brought in a consultant from Trinidad. This man started to do things at the Transport Board, save money, and the fact that he was saving money, like for instance, he sourced parts from the manufacturers in Brazil, and landed them here for a tenth of the cost of what they were being retailed to the Transport Board. He brought in reconditioned transmissions for $6,000, and we were getting them repaired for $35,000 a piece. They preferred to get the $35,000 transmissions done rather than get a $6,000, but it's still working.
No radio, so you just
can't
just level these
down. I just give you some facts. For instance, the $200 part that was being retailed to the Transport Board for $200, from it landed in Barbados for $200, and it was being retailed for $2,000. This guy brought in, cut out the middleman, and brought in these parts for $200. They got rid of him, you know. And when I sought to represent that man, and I was told, Caswell, you're wasting your time. My instructions are that he has to go. They didn't want to hear the facts, you know. They listened to propaganda, they hit the ground running. They look at the sewage system, the sewage plant that was messed up here the other day. That plant, this is the first time it happened, and it cost $75,000 to fix the last time. This time around, they're rushing and doing big YouTube videos and other kind of thing, and it cost $485,000 this time. You know, they're rushing and taking care of their friends. You know, this isn't a different.
Yeah, but you see, the thing about it is, as I said, there's one thing to have these generalities, but where are the facts?
I just give you
at
facts.
At the end of the day, we have to look at the facts.
I really need to come in here.
He has to respond first. Let the minister respond, and then I come to you.
The public needs to be, is painfully aware that, and we continue to monitor the sewage issue very closely. There are no floods on the streets of Barbados right now.
Just smells, but go ahead.
The point is, there's been a vast improvement with respect to the sewage in Barbados. And the reality is that whilst there's not a perfect fix, at the moment, we are in the process of moving towards that over the long term. And so to the extent that Mr. Franklin or anybody could accuse the government of not giving the South Coast problem the attention, in addition to Bridgetown, which many Barbadians... Including Bridgetown, the state of affairs that were at both have now been addressed to a point where both plants are seemingly operational again. Now, there are still some issues to be resolved. It requires financing. And because we understand that you cannot promote a country who... whose livelihood, every one of us, depends largely on tourism and have sewage flowing on the streets of the country. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, we have spent money to make sure that we can address that problem in the short term whilst we are in the process of sourcing financing for the long-term fix. And so the suggestion that there's any taking care of your friends, I think is absolute nonsense. And we have taken decisions about how this country is to be managed. Mm-hmm. And you cannot run an economy with sewage flowing on the streets.
What about the transport situation?
Well,
Transport Board.
Well, he was referring to a situation that predates the Barbados Labour Party. So whoever was, based on his assertion, whoever was selling the Transport Board things at 10 times the price, but obviously we can't be held responsible for that. And so therefore we've gone in and we've sought to resolve the situation as it relates to financing at the Transport Board, in addition to the Water Authority, in addition to the Sanitation Service Authority, to the extent that all of these contractual arrangements that were put in place, we had to resolve. And we had to resolve quickly because we cannot commit the taxpayers' money to things that were done in a manner that exposes the taxpayers of this country to unbridled liabilities. So we simply took control of the finances of all of these institutions, because the very nature of what we are going through now is in part because of the indiscipline that was allowed to prevail at many of those state institutions. So we took some decisions, and we are not going to back down from the fact that we took those decisions.
All right. I want to make comment. At least he gave me a little bit more fodder. I will agree that the people of Barbados voted to go in a completely different direction. I, however, will diverge from the minister in that I am absolutely certain that this is not the direction they thought they were headed in. This cannot be it. The story being told in terms of what taxes would be removed did not carry any addendum corollary in relation to what taxes would be added on. And it is an omission, I believe, on purpose, when you don't give all of the information. You say you're talking, but you're not giving all of the information. So I cannot say that they voted to go in this direction. It is clear from the result that they voted to go in a completely different direction. But without all of the information, you cannot make an informed decision. Also, it is not true to say that the last administration during its retrenchment exercise did not make provision for retraining or anything else. We lengthened the period of unemployment to 40 weeks. We had a retraining fund that was managed by the Ministry of Labor. And we also tied the two together. They got that idea from us to link the two together, because that is what was done. You had to show proof of attending the retraining classes in order to qualify for the additional periods of the unemployment benefits. I will also say that in terms of the sewage project, what is that fix? There being no sewage flowing on the street, but you move the smell a little further up the south coast to Worthing, and then you pump it into an ecosystem, and following that, pump it out to sea. You speak about saving the thing that makes us money, tourism. But what is the selling point when there's sewage in the sea? What exactly are you selling to our tourists if that is your short-term solution? It cannot be that. An entire ecosystem in the swamp.
But the question would come back at the Democratic Labour Party as to what the government was doing at the time. And the reality is that based on what was seen, there was seen to be very little being done at the time. I'm just telling you what the reports were coming into the newspapers, coming in on the
from
on
one
the, on
person,
the, on the, coming into the newspapers, coming on to Brass Tacks here, and I'm involved in both. So as you're aware, so I'm aware of what is being said, and also I'm from that area.
Yeah,
so
from one person who has suddenly gone quite silent.
Yeah, but the point is, you see, because I don't want to personalize this and get bogged down into these minute details when there's a real macro issue that we have to be discussing. Because one of the main issues I think that needs to be put on the table which would deal with both what you and Senator Franklin are talking about, is how did we get here?
Yes, because and that is the other thing that we have to discuss, because this is not a 10-year issue. There were issues from before 2008. Mm-hmm. There was significant borrowing. There was borrowing to shore up foreign exchange reserves before 2008. There was borrowing from the NIS before 2008. This is not a 10-year problem. This is a problem of living beyond our means for way too long. And it does need fixing. There is no doubt about that. The methods of fixing it are different. The pain that was being felt by the people was significant under the Democratic Labour Party. There's no doubt about that. But I posit that the pain they're feeling now is worse. It is absolutely worse. When you send home the persons at the bottom, those are the young, vibrant people with the ideas for changing this country. It cannot be that only consultants on large pay packets know how to fix this economy. It has to be that some of these young persons coming in know and have ideas, and we have to be listening to them. How are you listening to them if you send them home? Because if you talk about persons with less than 6 years, that is the demographic that you are targeting. You are targeting young people to send them home. You are targeting young families when you send them home. Why not use the mechanisms that are available to you in relation to the Pensions Act and deal with it from that aspect, especially if you're looking at modernization, which I interpret to mean that you're looking at some type of computerization. Then our young minds are more in tune to that than the older heads. Why is it that we're having that focus at the bottom? And I am particularly concerned when I hear the unions say that they're in the dark when the Employment Rights Act gives them a front seat, a front row position in redundancy situations. Section 31 gives them an active role. So when I hear the unions say that they are in the dark, I am satisfied that processes are not being followed. And further, when you speak about only leaning on LIFO, that tells me that you did not take on board the decision made by the Employment Rights Tribunal coming out of the NCC layoffs. We are supposed to learn from our mistakes, not repeat them.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you mentioned the whole thing with LIFO. This is something that what people are saying seems not to be taken on board, because I want to hear, as a trade unionist, Franklin, your response to that. Dennis, I'll let Dennis play this take right now from the Nation talk back on Wednesday, where the president, Mr. Edward Clark, was making the whole point about why the LIFO was chosen. Then I'll come to you.
Well, I think you need to understand the social partnership is made up of government, private sector, and labor. Labor is represented by Barbados Workers Union, C2SAP, and NUPW. When the original discussion took place about retrenchment or cost cutting in the SOEs and in the public sector, the labor leaders were heavily involved in the discussions at the social partnership. There's no secret. As far as I can recall, and I think this has been about three different meetings, it was agreed that any termination process, any retrenchment, would be done on a LIFO basis by the unions. So,
would you do that in your company, Ed?
Me personally?
Yes.
No.
Okay. Do you think it makes sense for us as a nation to take that approach to the reform of the civil service?
I don't think in the long term that will happen. I think this is something that is taking place now. But I believe those individuals, if they are the better skilled people, will find employment elsewhere or at some time back in the same government doing something else. Right? I mean, if they're really that good and that skilled. Now, I do not know who these people are. I have no idea. I don't even know the employment numbers. All I know is that a number of people are being retrenched. But it was, as far as I recall, the union's desire to have a LIFO process in place. That was not decided by private sector, and I think in the end the government agreed that they would use that principle because it is a principle of the labor relations, the way that these things are done. Now, I agree when it comes to productivity, skill set, and so on, it may not be the best solution. Okay? But I believe those people that have that skill set that may be required will find a way back in employment. If they're really that good, they will find a way back in employment.
Senator Franklin, last in, first out. The unions chose this. No, what? Why would they do that?
You have to base it on something, right? You don't have a good system in the public service where you can grade people. They're not working on it. So they said, well, if you're in the longest, you're staying. But unfortunately, the agreement is not what is being operationalized. People who were in for 12 years in school meals, if you want specifics, were told, don't come back to work Monday. They didn't even give them a letter. They sent them home. The chief personnel officer and permanent secretary, Ministry of Civil Service, I saw them going into meetings last week with the cabinet or with the prime minister. I don't know who exactly it was. I didn't go into the room.
I absolutely take umbrage to that statement. And the reason that I take umbrage to that statement, Mr. Price, and I want Barbados to be clear, we went through this exercise. We did not identify anybody in the process. I can give the country that assurance. So this is not a case of firing anybody that was hired by the Democratic Labour Party. We made sure that the process was followed with respect to last in, first out.
That is not true.
Mr. Franklin,
I was speaking to you.
I can assure you,
and it is not true,
and this country, that it was last in, first out.
I can assure you that is not true. I can assure you that is not true. I have people
who
we have people who came in within the last 5 months that haven't gone home. And we have people who are working 12 years that have gone, that have been told they're going.
But
because they haven't been given the letter yet.
If my understanding is correct, and you can correct me here, everyone who's supposed to be going home are supposed to be temporary. And they have to be in a certain post.
That is not true either. They hired people to go home, even from the established thing. And then they discovered, you know, you can't send home established people like that, and they pull back the letters. They call and tell them, no, don't hand out those letters, because the process is being managed by a political system rather than a system in the civil service that should be know what they're doing. Unfortunately, the civil servants don't say to the ministers, minister, no, you can't do that. They try to comply with whatever the ministers want. And that is what is destroying Barbados now as we speak. They've got to find jobs for the people, even in this austere time. And saying one thing to the public, but all lasting for a certain kind of stuff, and then not doing it, is something completely different. The politicians had no role in selecting people, but they did. It is unfortunate, you know, this minister has been given talking points to go and come here with. I am not giving any talking points. I am telling you what's actually happening on the ground. People are suffering. Let me do something, see? You're sending home people who are making $23,000 a year. The prime minister's entertainment allowance alone is $53,000 a year. And you're talking about caring and stuff? Mm-mm, it ain't true. Talk about those things. Talk about the things like you have hired people that are unnecessary because they're doing public service jobs. And you call them consultants and give them the job description of public servants and pay them top dollar. And just come here in the last few months, send them home. Mind you, and I keep saying all the time, you don't need 26 ministers and Barbados today. You never needed them. The prime minister agreed that you don't need 17 ministers. The last administration had 17. She said it's too much for the Barbados, a country the size of Barbados. And we have 26. Remember Cappy Greenidge? But he was Minister of Education, Youth, Culture, Sport, and something else. Right now, the ministry that he had is divided in four, got four ministers. Cappy was running it. Believe you me, they're finding jobs for themselves, taking care of themselves, and sending home civil servants. You know, civil servants should stand up. But unfortunately, they are not being led by their units because the units have been taken over by the same politicians too. That's the problem.
So we'll take a commercial break here. Just reminding everyone that this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Inc.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing. Big or small, Emilius Metals, we have
it all. Emilius Metals, we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Oh, yes, yes. Here. Let me see here. Welcome back to Brass Tacks, Brass Tacks Sunday. We're here with President of the Democratic Labor Party, Ms. Verla DePisa. We also have Senator Caswell Franklin, spokesman for the official opposition, led by Bishop Joseph Adderley. We have as well veteran political scientist Dr. George Bell, and the Minister of Finance and the Ministry of Finance and Investment, Mr. Ryan Strong. One of the things I want to bring to your attention before we go on is this thing I was doing, was a statement from then Prime Minister Frondell Stewart. It was made back in March 2014 when he addressed the 70th Annual General Conference of the National Union of Public Workers. And he said that as far back as 2001, the Oenatha administration was advised that the public service, then 26,000 persons, should have been downsized by 10,000 persons over a 10-year period. And I'm quoting, "The advice was on the basis that it took 36 cents out of every dollar of expenditure to pay wages and salaries, and this was thought not to be sustainable. That path was not pursued. Since then, the public service has grown much larger, and it now takes 54 cents out of every dollar to meet public service wages and salaries. When this information is placed in the context of declining government revenues, we can see why action has to be taken at this time to change the way that we do business and to restructure our public administration," said Mr. Stewart. He also went on to make the point that no government wants to send home public servants. Now, and why I'm going here is because I want to take this debate, some of what you said, Senator Franklin, was said in the newspapers for the last couple of days, and I don't want the sort of regurgitation of the same old, same old. What I want to do is to, let's look at the whole macro situation. Prime Minister Stewart, back in 2014, was saying the public service was too large. One of the complaints that we have with the public service is that it is often padded by politicians. All the political parties have been supposedly guilty of this, and I suspect, I could be wrong, that this is why LIFO, Last In, First Out, has been the preferred modus operandi when shedding jobs in the public service when there's a problem. That is, I suspect, why it is used. And so what I would like to do is to try to elevate this discussion here at a level where we're looking at, in terms of going forward, how we can do this thing better. Because, as I said, we're stuck in the mud. We've done this in the newspapers and everything already. Going forward, Dr. Bell, I'm coming here to you. Based on what Prime Minister Stewart would have said back in 2014, based on what is happening now, based on the retrenchments that we'd had in 81, of course in 94 when 3,000 were sent home and the 8% cut was instituted, based on what would have happened in 2014 2013 when the announcement was made that 3,000 were going home, which we heard subsequently there were less, but we heard in 2013 there were 3,000. And based on what is happening now, how can we deal with this situation going forward? Because that's where I think our view has to be in terms of if you're thinking about Barbados.